This is Law Bites, a podcast with Michael Geist.
Can you tell me about the lawsuit?
ChatGPT can give you a tailored headline about the lawsuit against it.
Canadian media companies have filed a lawsuit against OpenAI.
Some of Canada's largest media companies allege it can only do that because its parent company, OpenAI, scrapes stories from the web, including Canadian ones, to train it.
As you just heard in the opening clip, Canada's largest media companies, including the Globe and Mail, Toronto Star, Post Media, CBC, and Canadian Press, came together recently to file a copyright infringement lawsuit against OpenAI, the owners of ChatGPT. The lawsuit is the first high-profile Canadian claim lodged against the enormously popular AI service, though there have been similar lawsuits filed elsewhere, notably including a New York Times lawsuit launched last year. I wrote about the lawsuit, noting that, quote, the companies say they have no actual knowledge of when, where, or how their data was accessed, an acknowledgement that doesn't inspire confidence when there is evidence available if you know where to look. My post suggested that the primary motivation behind the suit was likely the hope to kickstart settlement discussions with the hope of a license. Robert Dia, a law professor at Thompson Rivers University, raised similar thoughts in his own piece on the lawsuit. He joins me on the podcast to discuss the case and its implications for copyright and AI in Canada. Robert, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you for having me back.
Yeah, no, I'm super glad that you decided to join. As it turns out, we both wrote on the same issue in the same week within a few hours of each other, and I thought it'd be good to come on and talk about. And the issue that I'm talking about is that generative AI companies, particularly OpenAI, the company behind ChatGPT, has been the target of multiple copyright lawsuits really around the world. Those suits often focus on the use of copyright materials to train their systems, and at times some of the outputs that come from some of these generative AI services. And those suits have now come to Canada, as a group of Canada's largest media companies, that includes the Globe, Post Media, Toronto Star, Canadian Press, and the CBC, recently filed a copyright infringement lawsuit accompanied by a whole series of demands. As I mentioned, we both wrote about this, both had some similar skepticisms and thought it would be good to get together and discuss. Can you get us started by providing some of the details of the lawsuits? You know, who's involved, what are the claims, and what are they looking for?
Yeah, sure. So, Michael, you've mentioned the plaintiffs, you know, all the major media in Canada, and they're making four claims in this lawsuit. The first one is that by using their material to train their language models, the various generations of them, OpenAI has engaged in copyright infringement. And the nature of the claim, and I'll be brief, just kind of summarizing, you know, the four grounds, and then we can go into detail. But very briefly, just merely making copies of the material in the process of training is an unauthorized reproduction. And so they say that either they made use of unauthorized copies by entities like Common Crawl, which is a nonprofit that provides an entire crawl of the web for anyone who wants it, that at the very least they used that, and that entailed an unauthorized copying. Or they kind of imply, they're not overt about this, but they imply that maybe OpenAI did some of its own copying directly. But what they don't allege, and again, maybe we'll talk about this in more detail in a minute, is that OpenAI has memorized, or that significant portions of their material can be found within the training data, a point we'll come back to, or that it can be regurgitated. It can be prompted to be, to produce, a substantial copy when you're playing around with ChatGPT. Okay, so that's one claim. Another one was that OpenAI circumvented technological protection measures. So part of that is that they circumvented protocols like the robot.txt tool, but also that they simply bypassed paywalls to access some of the content. And in doing so, they breach Section 41.1 of the Copyright Act, which makes it actionable to do that. So, okay, so that's another one. And then number three, they're saying that you've breached our terms of service, our terms of use, you know, buried somewhere in the background of our websites are, you know, is the fine print that says, look, you can go ahead and read all this free content on the Globe or the CBC, but you're only allowed to do so for personal, non-commercial use. And you've violated that. And lastly, in so doing, all of the above, you have unjustly enriched yourself. You have profited at our expense. And the relief that they're seeking is for the first two things, for the unauthorized copying and the circumvention, they're seeking statutory damages. Briefly, you know, you can either make the claim that your breach of copyright cost me X amount of money because, you know, here I can prove that, or you can elect to seek statutory damages, you know, up to $20,000 per infringement under the Act. And they're doing that for both the circumventions and the copying. And if you do the math, I mean, they're claiming lots of content. So it would be damages in the billions. And they're also lastly seeking injunctive relief. They're asking for an order that, you know, you don't use our material unless you abide by our terms and respect our measures, our, you know, protection measures.
Right. Okay. That's a really good starting point. I want to come back to a number of the different claims that we can unpack them in a bit more detail, but certainly that the prospect of billions in liability was certainly a headline grabbing aspect to these lawsuits. Now I mentioned that we've seen these kinds of lawsuits elsewhere. In fact, there are a number of websites online that kind of sort of are cataloging these, and we see a lot in the United States. We've seen some in the UK, now here in Canada. You know, in my post, I focused a bit on the New York Times lawsuit, given that there's some media parallels, to be sure. Can you talk a bit about that case, or perhaps even some of the other cases more broadly? How does the Canadian case compare to some of the things that we've seen elsewhere?
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe the first thing to say is that there are just a staggering amount of them. There are various websites that track them, and I was surfing them yesterday, and, you know, we're looking at something like 100 just in the United States alone. Like basically any generative model that is, you know, worth its salt has attracted some group or other saying, look, you only got it to be that good because you used our material. Maybe two lawsuits worth mentioning briefly are we should compare it to the New York Times lawsuit because that's significant, and also I'll say something about the Southern District of New York, the New York District Court for the Southern District granted OpenAI a summary dismissal motion. That's worth talking about. But the big lawsuit that everyone I think took as a kind of a roadmap in this area is the New York Times suit. So about a year ago, in a few weeks, end of December 2023, the New York Times sues OpenAI and Microsoft. And it's claiming a few things, but primarily copyright infringement. But its infringement claim is much more forceful because it's saying not only did the defendants scrape our material and copy it in the process to train it, but it makes much of the phenomena of memorization, which is the claim that that it is not the case that a model, to make a language model, to make generative AI, you don't simply kind of scan material and glean statistical patterns and then put the book or put the newspaper article away. You in fact incorporate it. You absorb a copy of it. And the proof of that is the phenomena of either extraction or regurgitation. And I'm coming up with these terms from an article we can talk about later. But nevertheless, the New York Times in its pleading has specific examples and a number of them to show that the model isn't just gleaning statistical relationships or data. It's actually copying and memorizing, keeping in its data somewhere, in its database, in the model, verbatim copies or substantially close to complete copies. And that with you know, not much effort, you can make it generate these copies. And so that's, you know, that's unauthorized reproduction of a meaningful kind. And that it also does something similar when it in when it makes use of something called retrieval augmented generation, which was a solution to the problem of hallucinations, where before a model gives you an answer, it goes out and it retrieves real information or current information from the web and then comes back and bakes that into the answer. So the New York Times is saying that both Bing Chat and OpenAI, like this is a year ago, it's probably advanced more so by now, engages in unauthorized reproduction when it does that. And so again, it points in evidence to, you know, the many instances in which there was significant reproduction. But they're also making another claim that the Canadian lawsuit doesn't make. And that is that maybe the New York Times, the total amount of material you drew on was so massive that the New York Times, like the many, you know, millions of articles from the Times you drew on, were only a fraction of the total material you trained on. That some material is more equal than others. Some is more important than others. And ours was of such high quality that you know, there's evidence that you used it sort of more frequently and in more meaningful ways than you used a lot of other material, or you know, larger amounts of other material. So our material was more important to getting you to the quality of product you can now offer the public for a fee. So that's, you know, that's a kind of unjust enrichment. That's an unauthorized use that should be licensed. They also allege that you have circumvented what in the States is called copyright management information. The Digital Millennium Copyright Act prohibits kind of removing, you know, the copyright tagline at the bottom of your article, you know, the ability to attribute a piece to yourself. So they're seeking damages and injunctive relief. We might say more about that action in a minute. But very briefly, two much smaller media outfits, Raw Story and Alternet, sued OpenAI in the District Court for New York. And they did, OpenAI obtained a summary dismissal motion because the judge found that even if the scraping on the part of AI of the material by these companies did entail copying, there was not clear evidence their material would be regurgitated, so that would be like publicly reproduced. Maybe the New York Times was, but not you. And also, they hadn't established actual harm. So for those two reasons, the action was dismissed. But the judge did invite the plaintiffs to sort of come back and reframe their action and try again.
Yeah, no, and that recent dismissal certainly is notable. And you mentioned there are lots of cases. We haven't seen a lot of successes yet, although there's still time to run, certainly, for many of these cases. You know, do you have thoughts on why some of the claims that we see in the New York Times case, particularly around, in a sense, the memorization or the outputs that we see, are not included here? I mean, the Times, as you know, really does take the time, so to speak, to do some digging into, you know, the use of their works and try to make the case that, as you suggest, it plays a significant role, even if it's as a percentage basis small, but its importance is more than certainly some of the other content. And the reality is that Canadian plaintiffs could have tried to muster similar kind of evidence, at least in theory. And there is some publicly available data about some of the uses of their content during the time period that they cite in their case. But almost all of that's entirely absent from here. They simply talk about how much they produce without really saying much more. In fact, they say quite explicitly, they don't really know what's being collected, how it's being used, or anything like that. Any thoughts on why they haven't really gone there in the way that the New York Times did?
So I could see two possibilities. One is that they simply couldn't reproduce the problem. You know, they weren't able to run prompts and have some of their content come out of it. And that could be because OpenAI has since made revisions to the models to shut that down to a large degree. But another possibility may have to do with the fact that their content was not as important to OpenAI as the New York Times. So my understanding is that one possible explanation for memorization, the phenomena of memorization, is that it occurs because certain pieces of material appear in the training set more frequently than others. So in other words, like if there's an article that went viral and it appears in tons of places, then the model's being trained on it more frequently than your random blog post over here that only got picked up once. And so it could be that very few pieces from the Canadian body of material was important to OpenAI in that way. But maybe, you know, at some point we'll come back to this, but that doesn't rule out the possibility that their content has been memorized.
It's a possibility. They just don't allege it, nor do they really have a ton of information about what's taken place. Where they do focus, as you mentioned, really is on the scraping of the content in the first place. And it certainly seems like the core issue, at least initially from a legal perspective, is going to be one around fair use or fair use style arguments, which is what OpenAI raises in the United States. And of course, fair dealing here in Canada. Can you talk a bit about what those arguments you think are going to look like? Certainly OpenAI is insistent that fair use applies, and they say the comparable kind of international approaches around fair use, which of course in Canada would be fair dealing. How do you see some of that playing out here in Canada?
I see two possibilities. So one argument would be OpenAI's argument here that there's nothing untoward happening here. The copying is temporary. It doesn't pose any kind of meaningful threat to the plaintiffs. It's not done at their expense. It's fair dealing. And as you mentioned in your article, that's a two-part test, according to our Supreme Court of Canada, interpreting Section 29 of the Copyright Act. The first, you know, the first step is to decide which bucket it falls in. Is it research, private study, et cetera? And there's, as you suggest, there's probably, the court will probably see this as research, given the directions from the Supreme Court of Canada that research has to be given a large and liberal interpretation, and also the holding by that court that using something, doing something commercial, doesn't preclude a finding of that it's fair dealing under the research category. And then if it is research, the question then is at stage two is it fair? And there's various factors, you know, the purpose of the dealing, the character, the amount, the nature, and the effect of the dealing on the work. And maybe the OpenAI argument in Canada would be, well, you know, this is fair dealing. It's de minimis copying, no public reproduction. None of this Canadian content comes out of ChatGPT, nothing to worry about, no real harm. So that would be one. But the second possibility is pointed to drawing on two sources, and the sources I have in mind are the New York Times lawsuit and a recent paper by two American academics, James Grimmelman and Professor Feder from, I think he's soon to be at Yale. And the argument that they make, I'll begin with them, and I'll share this paper with you, Michael, if you want to post it. The paper is titled, The Files Are in the Computer. And their argument, so they do a kind of deep dive on the technical material around the way models are trained. And their argument is that many of us kind of following the copyright debate don't really understand quite how the magnitude of the memorization problem. They make the assertion that every language model memorizes a significant amount of content. And that in that sense, every model contains its training data. That it's not the case that, you know, you run this, you run material through a model. It gleans certain statistical patterns. It comes up with variables or tokens, which are just numbers. And then, you know, we throw away all the books and the magazines we were using, or we give them back, whatever. No, it retains them. It retains that material. It's just encoded differently from the way that a copy of a song or a movie or an article would be encoded on a hard disk, for example, where it's, you know, discreetly put into compartments or sectors of a disk. That it's encoded in a different way, which makes it seem less obvious that it's there, but it is there. And the proof that it's there is that it can be coaxed out of the language model in various ways. And so that would be one argument, that memorization, then in other words, if the Canadian material was used, a good portion of it was used, and on the assumption that the Canadian news material is among some of the best quality material on which OpenAI trained its language model, the question then wouldn't be how much material from the plaintiffs did we draw to compile this mass, you know, to make GPT-4. It's what role or how important was that small amount of very high quality data to us in, you know, in creating our model? And on that argument, I think there might be legs to the claim that, look, this was not fair dealing. You engaged in substantial copying. It's copying that cannot be controlled. Okay, you can promise us that you won't reproduce much of our material, but can you really say that? And it played a material role in getting you where you are, and therefore, you know, it does affect us, or at least it's just not fair. So that's one argument, and the plaintiffs don't signal in this direction, but they don't foreclose this argument either.
That's true. That's true. I mean, I think some of the public comments I've seen from their lead counsel really points to the fair dealing argument, but the field is pretty open in terms of both the, I guess, the industry experts that we're likely to see to talk about what is really happening kind of under the hood, so to speak, when it comes to some of this, and then the application of the tests that the Supreme Court has articulated. You know, the industry, in addition to typically arguing, you know, nothing to see here, this is fair use or fair dealing, often seeks to frame this largely as akin to search. In fact, I think back to an episode that I did on this podcast some time ago with Aidan Gomez from Cohere AI, which is one of the Canada's star AI companies. The government just is giving them a large amount of money to set up a data center here in Canada. And Gomez really sort of emphasized that, well, this is what search engines do. They index, and we're doing the same. And I'm not sure that everybody is wholly convinced. Do you see significant differences? I mean, in some way, when you point to the Grimmelman paper, that actually suggests that there are differences. But I'd be curious on your thoughts.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think one difference would be that the rationale for a search engine to scrape your material is different from this. I mean, you know, I think the analogy would be something like you're walking around the neighborhood and you're seeing, you know, what's at which address, and then you're compiling kind of a guide. You know, it's not unlike you know, travel books. You know, if you go to Brazil, here are the 10 best restaurants. I mean, that is in effect what a search engine does, and it's so you know, is it copying when it gleans the information that on your blog you have the recipe for X, Y, and Z? I suppose you know, there is a copying, and it is unauthorized unless if they say they don't want it to happen, but which of course many sites do opt out, but beyond that, I think the differences just become greater, because all the purpose of the the copying or the scraping is simply to point back to you, to generate traffic to you. So there's a very strong claim that it's fair dealing. It is research of a kind, and it's absolutely to your benefit to be discovered. I mean, that's why you post on the web. Whereas this is different. I mean, this is, if we scrape your material, if we and that entails copying, I think there's a real argument to be made that the more effective use we make of your very good material, like if we can, you know, if we can, especially if we're guilty of regurgitating substantially large portions of an article, then that would, I think, detract. I think there's an argument to be made that that would detract from. So I'll give you an example. In the New York Times website, they say, the New York Times says, we have this part of our website called Wirecutter, and Wirecutter does these mini reviews on various products, and we get affiliate marketing out of those articles. So if someone's looking for a toaster or a new iPad, whatever, they go to the site and they read reviews and then they click the best one, and then we get a small percentage. Well, what's now happening is Bing is excerpting, substantially from the Wirecutter. People are reading it on Wirecutter, but not going to our site, and therefore not noticing the affiliate link. So we're really losing money by you doing that. And so I do think it is substantially different.
Yeah, no, and I mean, there's a quid pro quo that I think exists on the search side that isn't as obvious on the AI side. One of the other areas where there is a parallel is in the signal that websites can give as to whether or not they want to be scraped or not, which brings us to the issue of anti-circumvention rules. You mentioned it off the top. The Canadian media companies make a couple of arguments on that front, essentially arguing that OpenAI has circumvented technological protection measures in order to scrape that data. The first arguing that the robot.txt signal, in effect, is signals, we don't want you to scrape this information. You've gone ahead and done it anyway. Haven't respected that. And the other is they say that they are breaching paywalls in order to do this. I must admit, in my piece, I don't find the robot.txt argument compelling at all. It's not an effective technological measure. It's simply a signal that you hope is respected. But I think the law requires something more than just asking someone, please don't do this, in order to say that to qualify for those provisions. On the paywall side, though, there are arguments, certainly, if you circumvent a paywall, that would qualify. But I'm not sure that there's been evidence that they've gone ahead and actually done that. I'm curious of your take around this particular issue.
Yeah, I agree with you that the fact that they've used robot.txt and that it really only functions as a signal of intention is the weakest of the arguments for circumventing protection measures. But it is important, I suppose, that to point to their use of robot.txt so as to bolster the claim that we did not want our material used in this way. So that we were sensitive to the fact that scraping was going on, and we didn't want our material scraped. But I suppose my two cents on this part of the claim is that the wording of Section 41, which defines circumvention and protection measures and so on, and 41.1, which prohibit the circumvention of these measures, is so broad, as I read it, that the mere act of getting around a paywall, triggers, engages the section. And so if they can show that OpenAI did use material that was behind a paywall, or used material somebody else gathered that comes from behind, then it would seem that they will enjoy the protection of Section 41.1.
Yeah, interesting. Now, certainly the paywall one would be the stronger of the two. Interestingly, there was a brief time when people were actually using ChatGPT to seek to circumvent paywalls. And
yes,
my understanding is that OpenAI shut that aspect down. Whether or not they've actually circumvented themselves for the purpose of training, I can't find a lot of references to the notion that they have done that, but perhaps that would come out. The other claim, though, speaking of sort of signaling what you want or don't want people to do with your content, comes simply from the terms of use on various websites. And the argument that the media companies raise is that they have made it very clear. In fact, they cite in their claim that they made amendments to their own terms to emphasize that this kind of activity was something that they did not want to see happen. And they say, basically, you agree when you access content, you agree to these terms, you violated those terms. What are your thoughts of using what effectively is contract here as a mechanism to try to bolster their claim?
Well, one thought is that in the absence of legislation that provides more clarity in this area about who is entitled to what, contract would seem to be, you know, would be the only thing filling the void. And so if claims of this nature and in similar lawsuits succeed, if courts accept the proposition that the terms of service said you were not allowed to do this and you breached those terms, then everyone is going to everybody with a blog or whatever is going to say, and no use of this for AI unless you license to me. And that would be significant. That could make it a lot harder to use material, which wouldn't be good. But so maybe we'll come back to this when we talk about the future and what can be done. But I think this is one thing Parliament and lawmakers ought to have their eye on, you know, whether to what degree do we want to give creators the freedom to prevent the use of their material for training data?
Yeah, no, and there's sort of, my view would be there's a legislative potential role. The government has consulted, and we'll see if they end up taking anything on. My guess would be that this case would be permitted to run, so to speak. I mean, certainly, I think there were many really on both sides who said, you know, if there's an issue here, let's see what the courts have to say first and see whether or not Canadian law can already deal with it. If not, we can consider whether or not some reforms are needed. There may also be the prospect for different industry type solutions, you know, if the robot.txt solution, you know, doesn't work in part because people want to get a bit more granular, they want to be indexed for search, they don't want to be indexed for AI, then we need to find mechanisms to try to do that. You mentioned the licensing just towards the end of your response just now, and our piece, really both pieces end up in roughly the same spot, which is to say that, you know, there is the possibility of a really interesting copyright case that could go through several appeals and result in some really interesting evidence. But there is this strong sense, I think, that you get that at the end of the day, the companies really want to see this as a chance to get paid and are looking for a settlement. What are some of your thoughts in terms of that potential outcome and I suppose the likelihood of whether or not we might see a settlement here?
It seems likely to me very likely to me, because both parties have strong incentives to settle. So on the part of the plaintiffs, there are some obvious weaknesses in the claim, or at least they could become, you know, they could become real issues for them down the road. Did OpenAI do its own scraping? I mean, so much of what is alleged here depends on on whether OpenAI is the party carrying out the copying. How much of OpenAI's model, or material rather, was used in the model? And maybe also, you know, was there any memorization here? To what extent? So there's a lot of uncertainty, I think, there. And those are core claims for the plaintiffs. But on the part of OpenAI, I would think that OpenAI is keen to avoid discovery in all these cases. I mean, it's undergoing it at the moment with the New York Times, but and just, you know, like last week, apparently the New York Times went in and had access to lots of material and compiled all this information, and then apparently OpenAI engineers accidentally deleted like substantial portions of what was dug up. So maybe that occurred in good faith, who knows? But the point is, you can only imagine that there are trade secrets, maybe there are skeletons in the closet. There are places they drew on, material they drew on that they don't, they aren't proud to share, you know, like just nobody knows. I mean, they've been telling us on a sort of trust us basis that we only used good quality material, you know, material found from all these public sources. But there has long been suspicion that they would have needed much more, and you know, things like bootlegged copies of books and that sort of thing. So they would see, just on the trade secrets ground alone, I think they would want to avoid, I think, or minimize exposure to discovery. And so that would incline them to settle. And I would think that whatever it is would make the Canadian media happy would be very small fry for OpenAI.
Okay. Interesting. Although, you know, it much like the debate around Bill C-18, where there was this notion of, you know, pay us basically for linking to content. Part of the discussion was, once you agree to that, you know, what's to stop really anyone else from saying my links have some value here as well? I think you could see the same sort of thing play out. Although just, I guess we can go back and forth on this. At the same time, they have struck deals in some other places. And so there is already precedent for that. Why don't we close with this? You know, what do you see as we talked about that likelihood, but I guess more broadly, where do you see this issue going? Is it one where you think we're, you know, are we likely just to leave this to the courts for now, or is pressure likely to increase to see some sort of legislative or regulatory type solutions?
Well, I was impressed to see both you and Professor Scassa, your colleague, and a number of other academics here in Canada and around the world have been pressuring advocating, you know, trying to persuade the lawmakers in their countries to adopt a text and data mining exception to copyright law. You know, I have in mind here submissions that both you and Professor Scassa have made to the consultations about copyright reform that are still ongoing, as far as I know, and so you know, the two of you joined many other voices in calling for an amendment to Section 29 of the Copyright Act, so to add to, you know, a research, private study, the explicit exception for text and data mining as fair dealing. That wouldn't mean that, you know, any and all uses on the part of AI would be okay. It would just mean that it would be a bucket, and then the question would be, in this given instance, the way that you happen to use the Globe and Mail's material, was it fair? And then we could look at the factors, but the reason this is significant is that if that were the starting point, then so long as the you know, the memorization and regurgitation problems were under control, like that, if so long as an AI provider were in a position to say, look, we, you know, this really only happens, you know, 1% of the time, it would give the companies quite a bit of leeway to train. And it might also mean, just depending on how this is structured and worded and so on, the media couldn't opt out of it. Like that media couldn't say, by the way, you can't use this. It would be, you know, it would simply be a matter of, if you make it public, you know, then fair use can be made of it, which is, you know, which is the case for you and me if we decide to, you know, quote someone's article. Maybe the other thing to watch for is if parliament lawmakers do not act in time, or where they don't act, maybe we get clarity when the matter goes to an apex court. So, you know, if and even if it does, even if we do have law, sort of like we have an amendment to the Copyright Act or the American equivalent, etc., we will get apex decisions on the scope of fair dealing in these instances. And that will be really good. You know, that will give us some clarity as to the boundaries. What is it that creators can ask for? And what is it that we expect of AI companies? You know, where are the boundaries? Where are the lines? When do you cross them? And that would be helpful to But probably until we have both those things, you know, new law and new case law, we're going to be debating, you know, various instances.
I certainly think that's true. I mean, the amount of debate around these issues, you mentioned 100 odd cases and a lot of discussion around some of these issues. And, you know, certainly some who instinctively say, you know, there's either say that they feel like there's a real problem here, or others that say this doesn't feel really all that new from some of the other kinds of technical uses that we've seen in the past. And they look at the innovation that's taking place and want to find ways to make that happen. Whether we can find a solution that works for everyone is, I guess, sort of the million or billion dollar question, given the amount that's at stake. But, you know, yes, you've been really helpful in highlighting both this case as well as sort of some of the broader issues that are at play. And I know that we're both going to be following it closely in the coming months. Thank you so much for both the article you did and taking the time to come on the podcast to discuss it.
Well, thank you for having me.
That's the Law Bites podcast for this week. If you have comments, suggestions, or other feedback, write to lawbytes@pobox.com. That's LAWBYTES at pobox.com. Follow the podcast on Twitter at lawbytespod or Michael Geist at mgeist. You can download the latest episodes from my website at michaelgeist.ca or subscribe via RSS at Apple Podcast, Google, or Spotify. The Law Bites podcast is produced by Gerardo LeBron LeBoy. Music by the LeBoy brothers, Gerardo and Jose LeBron LeBoy. Credit information for the clips featured in this podcast can be found in the show notes for this episode at michaelgeist.ca. I'm Michael Geist. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.